Welcome to Female Empowered, a podcast for female fitness and wellness professionals and business owners looking for real talk about the ins and outs of our industry. I'm Krista Gurka, an accidental entrepreneur turned CEO of a multi-million dollar health and wellness business. In this podcast, I'll be sharing expert insights and having real conversations about what it means to show up, thrive, and of course, get paid. We'll talk about what works, what doesn't, and what really happens behind the scenes of client-based business. Also, you can take away advice and actionable steps that help you become a more successful and confident business owner on your own terms. So let's dive in. Hey there, folks. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of Female Empowered. And today I am so excited to have my friend Jared Kaplan here from Studio 26 in New York City. And he has a really, really unique business model that what we're mainly going to chat about today, but he's also an amazing business owner. He has a plethora of information to share with you guys, and he's an all-around great person. So Jared, would you introduce yourself to us and let us know who you are and what you do, and then we'll get into it.
Of course. So thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here with you. And by the way, I love that you are doing this and taking the lead. Even the name of your podcast speaks volumes. So thank you for having me on. So Jared Kaplan, as Krista said, lifelong New Yorker. I run a boutique fitness studio here in New York. And we started in 2010. My background was professional dancer turned Pilates and personal trainer and movement specialist. And I just hit a point where there were not enough good spaces to do the work I was doing with clients I loved working with. And I said, hey, like, I want to open up that space. So 2010, we did that. It's been 11 years through all the things, including the pandemic. And we're a home and a hub for independent professionals, including physical therapy, massage, Pilates, personal training, and various body work. So it's a beautiful space. It's an oasis in the middle of New York City. And we really geek out on supporting professionals to have the best independent practice that they can have.
And it really is an amazing space. I was fortunate enough to visit you there, and it's great.
Thank you. I was super curious
about seeing it and kind of understanding a little more. And after I met you at PMA in person, I was like, I really want to go see you when I'm in New York. So I hope I'll be able to travel there soon enough and we can meet up in real life again, as they say.
Again. Yeah.
So can you tell me then, what was your work environment or life like as part of your career prior to deciding to open this type of your own business?
Yeah. The before, after, right? So the before was I was fortunate to be sort of the busiest Pilates teacher at various studios. And they range from huge corporate gyms, like huge big box, Upper East Side, New York City, you're one of a tiny cog in a huge machine, to a small mom and pop Pilates studio. That was where I did my certification and there were great people around. It was very intimate. So I kind of ran the gamut between those. One was just like literally company shirt, very structured, very cold environment where I was just the face in the shirt and I was doing sessions. It was all about sales. It was all about hitting your numbers. It was all about just delivering the best service to clients. And it was very corporate, very trained. On the other side were the kind of mom and pop Pilates studio, make it up as you go, be your like fabulous badass self, like wear whatever you want to wear, be you, and that's the magic. So those were the two extremes in terms of work environments. They both had drawbacks. They also had positives to them. So I was really fortunate to get the kind of clear sales training and focus on numbers that I'm still really interested in from the corporate environment. And the authenticity, the integrity, the curiosity, and open-mindedness of the sort of smaller Pilates studio. In the middle, there were rental places I had tried for clients that said, hey, I'm in this location. Can we do a session here? I'm like, I got to find a spot for the client I want to see. My first job was out of the city teaching in a suburb where I was booked one day a week doing six sessions back-to-back with whoever they put on my schedule. I commuted, I will embarrassingly admit this, I commuted 90 plus minutes each way to teach one day of sessions. And a year in, I was not always good with numbers. A year in, I finally was like, let me just get out my calculator. And if I take the hourly rate I'm getting paid as an employee and I add my commute time and divide the actual take home, like, oh, I'm not making as much as I thought I was. There's a huge cost to it that I felt busy. I felt successful because I have 5 sessions back to back. When I actually looked at what I was really making, including my commute time and all the time I could have spent elsewhere, like, oh, this is not worth it. And I decided to pull the plug. So I just was in the look really for what is the place that I want to be in for the long haul. I've always been thinking about this business as a long-term play, not trending, not what's quick and easy, what's not a short-term fix, but like, if I love teaching, because it's hard work and we all know that, if I love working with people, if I love learning so I could adapt to what clients come in with, I need to actually really, really enjoy it because it is not an easy ride. So I wanted to create an environment where that longevity could exist. So that's where the idea of the studio started to come up with. The negatives in the places I've been in before were kind of the corporate cold environment that we all have, well, many of us have been in, where you just can't really be yourself and you're constantly having to dance through politics and structure and protocols. On the other side was the kind of free for all of like, there's no one telling me what to do. I can't really get what I'm wanting to do done because there's no there. I just like have to figure it out all the time and there's no consistency. So in the standard that I wanted to create for my clients, I wanted a space that was well run. I wanted a space that the owner wasn't running insurance fraud, to be honest. I wanted a space that had integrity and that people could actually be themselves. And that includes, you know, celebrity clients to every Joe Schmo who walked in the door. Like, people could get the best quality session, no matter who they were, even in New York. It wasn't about status. It wasn't about access. Just like, you could get an amazing session because you cared about it and you had a person you wanted to work with. So that was all the before.
That's like amazing. Yeah. And that's, I mean, I think especially in Manhattan, although I do think it's pretty common across our industry in general, that people kind of bounce around from studio to studio. That's how they can get up to 40 hours a week. I think it's even more prevalent in Manhattan because a lot of these studios are so close to each other. So you can kind of take this commute out, although I agree with you, like these long commutes to some places, and you're absolutely right. It's one of the things when I interview people now that are like an hour and a half away, and I just see the writing on the wall down the road, and I never want to be prejudicial, I would say, but I know that at some point, even if they have 6 hours worth of work, they're going to be like, wow, if I'm an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back, yep. Right? So I kind of think of these things now. So my question to you then is, did you have any entrepreneurial, you know, things prior to opening your own business? Did you have any business training? Did you have that modeled in your life before? What did that kind of look like?
Yeah, that's a great question. I didn't know that I did, to be honest, but I did. And what that looks like, if I go big picture, I didn't learn until fairly recently that in my own family lineage, there were entrepreneurs. That my dad is an attorney. He started a law firm when he was pretty fresh out of law school, a couple of years in. His father had actually run several businesses. Some of them were decent, some of them tanked. So it was very kind of a roller coaster. And then his father before him, before the Holocaust, had like a whole family business that got wiped out in World War II, before World War II. So I didn't know that history. It wasn't part of my family upbringing. I wasn't the kid in the restaurant who's watching their parents, the chef. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the kid in the store cutting flowers for their mom who ran the store. It wasn't that. But somewhere in the DNA, there's definitely a very clear vein of business owners and entrepreneurial spirit. Some that's just by happenstance, because as a Jewish family that had to escape pogroms and come to America, the classic immigrant story is you have to figure it out. And for some, that's just finding any job possible. For some, you have to innovate because job opportunities were not given to you. For my father, it was he couldn't get jobs at certain law firms because of who he was. So what option do you have? You open up your own firm. For me, my training specifically in my life was as a dancer, you're constantly hustling, right? You're looking for gigs, you're auditioning, you're figuring things out, you're choosing whether it's work with an established company or start your own. And I specifically moved to San Francisco as a young dancer post-college because I wanted to see what was out there. And I really wanted to join a company. That was the dream. Like, I want to be in a company that I love to work with. And I worked with some great choreographers. But in those days in San Francisco, around 1999 to 2002, there are only like two companies that really had consistent touring where the work could get out there. And I love the people I worked with, but it was a choice to either create my own company and work together as a collective, or hopefully get one of those two jobs, which wasn't in the cards for me. So I moved back to New York. But the interesting part of that San Francisco time, I took a job in a nonprofit and sort of quickly worked my way up to be an associate director of a small nonprofit that serviced the dance world. And in that role, we were constantly creating programs. And that's where I sort of cut my teeth in terms of taking lead on creating structure, creating systems that were useful for a community. And I very much can map what I'm doing now for Pilates teachers, physical therapists, any fitness and wellness professional, creating services with a space, which is very similar to what I was doing in the nonprofit world, creating dance festivals and curating programs for dancers and choreographers.
Well, that's really exciting. That's it. That I didn't actually know that part of your story. That is super exciting.
Thank you. It's less told. In New York, actually, when I moved to New York, I was hired and I moved back to New York with a job ready to go from a similar dance organization in New York that was older to be a similar kind of role. I was basically an arts agent manager. So I was managing 16 companies and helping them get touring. So it was more on like the management side, but same idea in terms of I was constantly working with artists to figure out what's their story, how do they market, how do they brand what they're doing? How do you communicate what they do to an audience that might not know it? And that thread, if we go really big picture, I've always been that person, whether it's as a dancer, nonprofit, arts, business owner, I feel like I'm constantly the person that's sort of synthesizing information and communicating it to audiences that are new to it or need a little polishing off or understanding.
Yeah. So I mean, it sounds like that. Yeah, no, it definitely, I mean, I think that you have from when I've met you, you have systems and processes down really well. And I think you've done an amazing job with also how to help. So what do you call them, the people that rent space from you? Do you call them your clients? Do you call them what do you call them?
Yeah. So internally, they're all wellness professionals. So mm-hmm. WP is for short, but our wellness professionals are really, we think of them as our clients. So we basically have two clients. There's the professionals that we service, and then there's the end client that there's
end consumer. Yeah. So, I mean, I think you've done an amazing job. Even when I was at your facility, when you were showing me how you kind of help them understand when you're with your map and how they're going all these different places and how, if you can aggregate that into one specific spot, that's a really great way that you can help your wellness professionals really improve their outcomes, because if you're not traveling to a ton of different places and you can see one or even two more clients, what that does to their bottom line is
totally
big. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then did you go from deciding this type of model versus saying, you know, I want to open the Jared Kaplan studio?
Yeah. The inspiration came from a book called Cradle to Cradle. And Cradle to Cradle, for those of you who don't know it, is written by William McDonough and Michael Braungart, architect and chemist. And it's basically a book on design. It's one of the pivotal books before the green environmental movement really exploded about sustainability. That was a linchpin in that helped people get their brains around what does good design really look like? Who does it serve? How does it take care of all of us? And it was that seed inspiration to think big picture around designing a better space that would have not only impact for professionals' bottom line and making more money, but also the quality of sessions. And then, of course, the clients that they serve. And I looked at different models, right? I decided, having been in some not so great studios and big gyms, that there had to be a better way to do it. And when I got really clear about the value that I saw as a trainer, what I wanted to preserve and support, I had to really think about how do you scale that in a way that's useful, not in terms of 50 locations, but what do you create in a blank canvas that really works for you and the people that you're trying to serve? So very client-centric. At the time, I was lucky to work with some really high-profile people, as well as normal clients I'd seen for 15 years or 10 years at that point. And I really just wanted to look at what's the best client standard that we can establish. Because for me, when I got really clear on the product and the product I wanted to support, it's all about the relationship. And we know that we're in a relationship heavy business, but we often go to product as an external as opposed to a communication tool. So we think about making something kind of plastic as opposed to dynamic. And if we're looking at it dynamic, it's about how you hold space for a patient coming in. How do you hold space for a client coming in so they get the best outcomes because your focus is better? So in the models we looked at, the old model obviously was you kind of put your name on the door. It's Krista's studio or Jared's studio. And you do your thing, and then you have apprentices underneath you, and you have employees, and you're kind of the star teacher, and hopefully employees don't steal money, and hopefully the people that are there want to support your vision because they are charmed by you. And I was like, I don't want to do that. And the reason I didn't want to was because it felt like too much pressure and didn't want to be about me. On a business level, I thought it would have better leverage financially and in terms of sustainability if there were other people that had bought into it. And the fact that even for your podcast here in terms of Female Empowered, the idea of having a more collective model for me was a stronger play. I didn't want to do the kind of typical patriarchal male version of this is my way, this is my thing, it's about me, let's go. That just isn't how I roll. My entire professional career as a dancer, Pilates teacher, I've been surrounded by really smart, powerful, strong, inspiring women. And by osmosis, luckily, that's changed my way of thinking. Being gay also, I just have an outside view of how you can do things. And I tried to harness all those skills to look at what is a useful model going forward. The criteria really were about how to have more people come in and have some version of ownership, whether it was just the buy-in if they really wanted to support it, or it actually benefit them financially. So if you foreground the professionals that are using my space, they actually are succeeding more than the space is itself because we're giving them the platform. And if they do well, then the platform does well. If the platform does well, it's only because the people coming in. And I didn't like, as a trainer, the sort of manipulation and potential manipulation of older models where you're kind of forced into some sort of a cookie cutter thing that you don't have agency over. Or even just clarity, to be honest, in our industry, like what are the rules that you're playing by? And to be really clear in terms of expectations and job descriptions even, so that you're not kind of lost in the weeds of understanding what you're showing up to do each day as a professional. And to look at a space, how could a space help inspire people to be their best professional self while also contributing to everyone's bottom line? Now, that's not to say that it's not a co-op, right? So to be clear, there have been other spaces since we opened in 2010 that purport to be co-ops, but they're not actually shared ownership, which I think is a beautiful model too. But I think that people need to be rigorous, as if anyone's listening, thinking of your own model, be really clear about what you're actually offering, because it'll come to bite you in the end. If you're doing a co-op model, co-op is about shared ownership and then understanding what that looks like. If it's by percentages or everyone's equal, collective is a different model, right? So the ownership has to be really clear going in so people know what they're getting.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I love everything you said. I want to come work with you. I want to come be in your facility.
Let's do it.
If I ever give it all up and I'm coming, if I come to Manhattan, I am, you know, my at one point there was a time, and I think this might be in my future at some point now that I think things here are settled, that I would say, you know, I'm going to do like a week in Manhattan. I love Manhattan. Like, I'll do a week in Manhattan. And if I do that, you know where I'm coming, right? Studio 26. That's a great. So can you explain them? Because I think this is not common knowledge for people. What is it that you actually call this type of model that you have? And what's the difference between that and a co-op or a co-working station, or what the other things are that people a collaboration, those kind of things?
Totally. So very simply put, we are a co-working space, right? So obviously I own and run it and I operate it as CEO, but it is a co-working space, so that we do basically two things. One, we license rooms to people that are physical therapists, massage therapists, chiropractors, acupuncturists. So any treatment room, anything that could pretty much be done in a closed door in a room, that's an exclusive space. We license those out to individuals that want to be there full-time, half-time, or quarter-time. So very simple model. It's super clean cut. And then we also have an hourly model where people can rent by the hour, either a room or equipment. And that's in a Pilates studio, a personal training studio, or an open movement studio. So that's kind of the entire product. And so what that can look like is you have a full-time practitioner that says, hey, I want to have one home. It's a professional space that's run for me. I don't do any of the like space operations, facilities management. I show up, My clients come to me, I get all the value of having this place be really well run, and I can do my job and love doing my job. Two, the people that need a space out of five, they might be running around to five different neighborhoods. They want to come in for that one client that lives two blocks away, pop in for the hour, and then go off on their way. So we have everyone in between as well. And back to what you mentioned before, Krista mentioned the map. Actually, one of my favorite things that we've done, we did this giant kind of wall-sized map, and I interviewed, I want to say it was like 60 different professionals, and we plotted with pins on the map where they were traveling to in a typical week to understand how many locations they all were seeing people at. And it was mind-blowing, the results. We actually have a picture of it on our blog from a couple of years ago. The results were really staggering because people that I thought were really full and in one spot, even those people had like three locations where they were cobbling together 30 hours a week, maybe 35 or 20 hours a week. And the service then for my place was like, I think people are more successful on several levels when they have a consistent and stable source of income. And commute is just one aspect of that. And you can look at commute either as financial, right? You're losing time because you're just traveling. There's also value to commute because you can read a book. You can listen to this podcast while you're commuting right now. You are listening to this podcast and you should subscribe and hit like and send all the reviews for Krista. So commutes are great. I love listening to podcasts on my driving if I'm like taking a weekend drive. And there's value to that if it's structured and if you're making use of the time. If it's not used time, well, then you have to consider, could that time be better spent in other ways? And for some people, just to like play both sides of this, the forced version of having downtime on a commute is actually really useful because it doesn't get sucked up by anything else, especially now with the pandemic when people are quarantining and still in their homes. It's hard to do all the things in one place because your brain is context switching all the time. So you think that you're filming a podcast, but you're also playing mom and school teacher and studio owner and husband and wife, like all the things in one space is really challenging. And we all know that. So for me, the value of having a home in New York City that was one studio that people could use as their work home in a co-working space was really, really productive, both financially, but also in terms of stress and enjoyment levels and back to loving what you actually do. And then the really big one is also about community. And we are all pent up for community needs. To have people around that hopefully you really enjoy being around as professionals who get it, who can commiserate with you. And for clients as well, we know the cheers effect really well, that when you have standing sessions and people are working out at the same time, even if they're not together, there's value to seeing that familiarity because it literally builds community for the business.
Yeah. And that's a great point. Even if you're a solopreneur, you're around other people. Cause I think one of the things we hear from solopreneurs all the time is I do love what I do. I love being in business. The one thing I miss is just learning from my peers, right? Just being in an environment with that. So I think that's a great point too, just about the commute. And I'm a big, big believer in we should design the business based on the life that we want. Right. Mm-hmm. So for example, when people ask me like, well, questions about business, but my life is different than your life, right? For me, I was very much like what you were saying. I did not want to commute. I did not want to go to people's homes. I wanted to stay in one place. I didn't want people to come necessarily into my home per se. So I knew what I wanted, right? There are other people that like the travel. And like you said, especially now, in this generation, you can listen to a podcast when you travel. You can read and listen to an audiobook when you travel. If you go on the train, you could probably actually read a book if you want, if you're in Manhattan, right? But so I think it's really important for people to decide on the life that they want and then build their business around that rather than the other way around. Would you agree?
I think for me, the insight experientially was looking at what is the problem you're trying to solve for anybody, mm-hmm. right? Because as you said, it's all different. Some of us have different choices. Some of us are privileged to not have to make those choices. And some of us are privileged just to have choice at all, right? So within that context, it's understanding that if you're asking the question, and if you're listening to this, you definitely are asking those questions. What is the problem you're trying to solve? If your number one priority is, how do I make my time more efficient? Or how do I make more money? Or how do I fulfill the dream of this idea that I have, it's then like, what are you actually doing to solve those things? And until you ask that question, it's sort of shooting in the dark. And it might not work, right? So for me, it was partially, I saw all these different issues with spaces I had worked at. They weren't satisfying. I was getting kind of jaded about it. So I wanted to solve that. I want to enjoy what I do. Otherwise, I should consider a different career. So that was number one. Number two is like, well, I don't want to run around to four different places that I like. Let me risk all, right, as an entrepreneur and try to build that vision and see if other people find value in that. Maybe they'll enjoy it too. And, you know, 10 years in, it's clearly working. And we've been really fortunate to have people who've been there the entire time. Some have gone and left, but it really depends on what your situation is and what the immediate short-term needs are for you while thinking about the big picture and where you want to be in X number of years.
Right. And so can we pull back the curtain even a little more behind the scenes in your business model? So you said there are people that pay, like, what would they pay a monthly? Is the license like a monthly rent? Is that kind of what it is? Basically, they're renting the space. And what do you then, as the hub, provide?
Yeah, there is a long list of perks that people get by committing to sort of a contract with us, an agreement. So yeah, it's sort of rental for the, we do a year contract, sometimes more than that. And I don't really, honestly, I don't think of it as rental in that sense, because for me, we're providing much more than just sort of a rental mm-hmm. space. Some people might see it that, which is fine, but there's so much more that we're doing. And that includes a lot of professional development support. There are sort of five categories that we've identified that every professional needs that we deliver. And we have those broken down by sort of tactics and deliverables for each category. And before the pandemic, what we were doing is that anyone who was new that was joining us was basically given 12 weeks of assets where we would work with them if they wanted it, of how to run their business better. And they could choose what was really something that they wanted to work with. And we really leaned into how we can support them. And it wasn't about just them showing up and doing their own thing. We said, hey, we're actually going to partner with you so that you can improve your practice, whatever that meant for them. And again, that's some people who are doing two sessions a week if they wanted it. We used to have a minimum of five before COVID, up to people that already had a full book of business. They had different problems they were looking to solve. So wherever people were at, we said, look, we're going to give you more than just a rental space. And I talk about it as more than a pretty space. My space is beautifully designed, but people are not coming in to do a session because of the plant wall. Does it look good? Great. Sure. Does it feel good? Absolutely. It's healthy, but you're not traveling 6 miles because that space has a prettier paint color. Right? You're going because of something else. So we want to really look at when people are joining us, what is really the product we're giving them? And what is something that we're sincerely interested in? For me, that was about helping them be the best professional they could be. For other spaces, that might be about the most intense workout or the most fine-tuned workout, right? It might be about the product in terms of a session. For me, it was trying to get beyond the session to look at what is a professional doing in their life and how can we support them where they're at.
Because ultimately, what it sounds like to me, that ultimately the success of the wellness professionals in your facility, not only does it behoove their customers and their clients and the impact they can have on those people, but it also behooves you as a business, because the more successful yep. they are, the more they'll want to stay. It's kind of like that nice cycle. 1,000%. So you're giving them much more than just a room. You're basically saying, not only do I want you to create a space for you, but I want to help you be so successful through business mentorship, et cetera, correct?
Yeah, exactly. It is a simple win-win model that has a lot of detail behind it to get it there. And there are two examples I can think of just today that stood out for me and how we do that. One, we talked about commute and all that. So just improving people's time management, especially in this industry where some people are up at 5 a.m. training clients, whether that's Zoom or in person. Some people are up till 9 p.m. and everything in between. So time management, like we know with nurses, doctors, trainers, is really challenging. It takes a major toll. So we had one person that joined us who had been teaching at five studios in 2019. Her goal was to not be exhausted. She wanted to have date nights with her boyfriend. She wanted to be able to do what she wanted to do in the afternoons and have a social life with her friends and be present for her life. And not wait and say, someday I'll have the life I want. She says, I really want to do that now. How do I do that? We looked at her schedule and one-on-one with some coaching and structure, we said, hey, what levers do you need to pull over time to get a better schedule that works for you? And with that coaching, with her work, it really was on her. We got her to be at her choice in two locations and then one. And in that first year of doing that, she started to close off certain hours, set some boundaries around her schedule, move clients to hours that worked for her, and then only worked from the morning until about mid-afternoon, had evenings off. Instead of working 6 days a week, she actually worked 4 or 5 days a week, had weekends for the first time in her life. She could actually have a real weekend, which she was excited about. And then she made $10,000 more mm-hmm. while working 12 hours less per week, including commute time. So we included the commute as part of her work time. So $10,000 more income in that year by working 12 hours less. I'm like, wait a second, what? And she casually in our year-end review was like, yeah, so I ran my numbers and I worked 12 hours less a week and I made $10,000 more this year than last. I'm like, wait, what? Say that again?
Because yeah, it's so amazing. Casual. Amazing. And I think that's a really good testament to you though. Like, you know, so many of us, and I'm sure you went through this as a teacher, as a clinician, we are nice people. We're usually like very emotionally based people sometimes. And so
speak for yourself.
Well, I'm not that nice anymore, but there was a time when I was starting my career that I felt really bad saying no to anyone. So someone would be like, will you see me at 6 a.m.? Yes. Will you see me on, even now I have clients every once in a while, they'll be like, can you see me on a Sunday? And there's so much of me that I'm like, and I'm really, it was a hard lesson for me to learn. I talk like I'm a badass, like, oh, now I'm boundaries. But even me, sometimes I'm like, so, but when we learn to start being in integrity with ourselves, because if we're saying yes to them, we might be saying no to us. And just learning and saying, you know what, I'm not available at that time. If people really want to see me, they will see me during the times that they can. Now, that's not to mean I had a client who bent over to take laundry out of the laundry like last weekend and she couldn't move. She couldn't get off her floor. Did I go see her both days over the weekend? Did I take my table? 100% I did. But that's not happening all the time per se, right? And I think that's a valuable lesson, even for you to just give her that permission to say, you can set these boundaries. Let's work the numbers to make sure you're still making it. And lo and behold, all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, that actually worked. And I made more, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's great. And I think also the quality of life improves. It's mm-hmm. a hard lesson. For me, it was learning to say, instead of no, not now. And like having to practice that. And you nailed that. Like it's so clear. The other example I think about was a physical therapist that joined us who she had been working a bunch of different positions, employee on her own, like name it, she was doing it, said yes to everything. And when she finally got to the place, which was, by the way, super scary and induced a ton of fear and anxiety to make that transition, we've all been there. So if you're in that place now listening where you like you're wrestling with this and you get that blood pressure is rising and you start breathing a little heavy, it's like, how do I do this? That is totally normal. It makes sense. It's scary, but you can move through that. When she moved through that on the other side of it, she goes, my clients are saying that they're getting better sessions here. I'm like, why? What do you think that's about? She's like, well, because I'm more focused. I'm not thinking about the next session because I have to run and get an Uber, get to my next appointment. I'm going to be late. And I start getting distracted. Her focus went up. And we know if you're more focused, you're going to get a better session. A better session means what? Better patient outcomes. Better patient outcomes, a happier patient who's probably going to give you referrals, right? So the huge loop of things that happen when you say not now in a meaningful way is exponential. And I will say also from my experience that I think particularly for women in our culture, it is a harder battle to fight to say no, to say not now. So kudos to everyone who's challenging that because we need to allow, as you said, permission to do it. Men, just for all the reasons we've got to get into right now, it's just a culture in a different way. It's trained in a different way. So absolutely permission for every woman listening or female identified listening to say no and stand by it.
Yeah. And one of the things that really helped me was I'm saying no to myself. So if I say yes to this person, it means I'm saying no to myself. And who's the most important person in this relationship? It's me. And it's okay. And you know what? There is a book that I read this in college. So my therapist in college gave this book to me and it was called When I Say No, I Feel Guilty. And I don't remember the author about it, but I still have like the paperback version with no. And every once in a while I'll go back and it talks about how you can say no in ways, just say, you know, thank you so much. I'm unable to commit to that at this time. I really appreciate you thinking about me. Or, you know what, I'm not able to do that now, but if next time you actually ask me sooner in advance, I might be able to put that on my calendar. And I'm not saying that I still sweat sometimes when people ask me things. I'm like, okay, deep breath. I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say, saying no doesn't make me a bad person. It just saying I'm being in integrity with myself. So it does get easier. Yep. I'm not going to say, I don't know that it will ever 100% get completely like, oh, no problem. But it is, especially now my kids are getting older. They're teenagers. My older son's going to be out of the house in a year. Like I don't get that time back. And so now I'm just saying, you know, this is a priority for me right now. But so this is fascinating. Before we go, I really would love to ask you, because I know, and you know, you in your backstory telling us that you work for a nonprofit for a while kind of sets up the whole part of how you are very open in your activism, as you have been in Manhattan. We are both part of the Pilates community. So that has been a whirlwind over the last, you know, for a while. And we've both been pretty involved in the community. So, but I know that you have some things, some, you know, organizations and movements that you are really passionate about. And I would love if you would like to talk about some of them, because I think it's great to share. And I also think it's important that we bring light to some of these things that maybe who knows who's listening right now that might not even know. So I would love if you're interested in sharing some of that.
Sure. Definitely this year. I mean, it's just as a cisgendered white male to be able to say Black Lives Matter and Trans Lives Matter, to stop Asian hate, like all the things that have come to some people's awareness anew this past year, to just get really comfortable talking about those things. And in all the communities that we're in, to have the permission to stand up and speak out, not only for yourself, but for those that don't have a voice, and to make space for them. And the irony is, so I'm very aware of my privilege as a male, even to be invited as a guest on your podcast. I don't take that opportunity lightly. And I know that you're doing amazing work. And again, thank you for taking lead to give voice to other people, whether it's in the Pilates community, physical therapist communities, to look at, are there people that are not given a platform? Are there people that are not being given a voice to take up space? And the more that we can do that, to check our own instincts to take space, has big repercussions. And representation matters. Mm-hmm. Giving people a voice matters. And that, it doesn't have to be a huge campaign. It can literally be in your own studio or a coworker. That's like stopping yourself and asking questions and listening, right? So in terms of the place that I put my energy this past year has been educating myself as much as I possibly could around anti-racism work, and reaching out to see what resources I could engage with, and educating myself and doing the work in spaces where I had agency. That includes in my building where I'm on board of the co-op. It's like, hey, can we make our building more inclusive? Can we create language around that so people know, even in something as like technical as a building, that when they come here, we stand against any form of bias. So that's in my own home, literally. And if you don't own a home, that could be in the building management company, it can be with your neighbors, whatever it looks like. I own a business. So of course, it is completely on my shoulders to set the tone in terms of the language and the messaging around my business. So something as simple as creating an anti-racism statement for the business and sharing that with every new customer that comes in. Say, hey, this is a part of what we do. This is what we stand for. And making that explicit, not pretending like people are going to know just because. It really needs to be explicit and communicated. So those are two versions. And I'm committed to continuing. I certainly am not an expert. I don't even think I'm a beginning student at this point. But I'm trying to educate myself as much as I can so that I can learn and keep doing better.
Yeah. And, you know, I appreciate you taking the lead as well. And I appreciate lots of people in our communities that have turned the mirror. I certainly turned the mirror on myself as well. And, you know, I feel very privileged. You know, I'm a white female, come from, you know, I recognize that my privilege has allowed me to have certain things in my life. And it is uncomfortable learning this. I'm certainly a beginning student, and I'm taking the time to listen more than I speak, and try to wrap my head around when I do get maybe emotional or something react to me, like, what is that reaction coming from? And is it true? Is it true? And is it valid? So, and realizing that everyone comes with their own experiences, and I can't personally relate because I have never had some of those experiences, you know? And at the time of this recording right now, there, the Dante Wright shooting in Minnesota. And, you know, I have two teenage boys, and the struggle for me is I know that I will never have to have that conversation with them about what to do at a traffic stop. And that is very powerful to me in that I also try to then teach them, what if they are with one of their Black friends and this happens? Like, what can they do to help the cause? And it's a struggle for them too, because it's not their reality. So they're not even understanding that situation. But I think the more we talk about it, and the more we bring, just like you said, the more we bring light to it, the more we hold space for conversations that are open dialogue. And I know that I'm going to say some things that are wrong or maybe prejudicial, and I just want to learn from them. And I know that I'm going to be like, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I am going to work to be better.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think for me, the accountability is the biggest piece of it, and education absolutely has to happen. Awareness has to happen, but you also, one, we all need to take action, especially absolutely critically as white people, to actually take action in our communities, both locally and nationally, to say, hey, here's what we stand for. These are policies that are systemically not cool. We have to change them.
Not okay.
And to be very specific in what the asks are.
Right. So move beyond just like a hashtag or a repost. Yeah. And it's work. It's been work for generations. So it's going to be work moving forward. So, well, Jared, I could talk to you for hours and hours. I hope you'll come back, because I would love to have another conversation with you. I hope you'll come back over and over again, but I would love for you to tell people where they can find you. So they, you know, if they have questions maybe about this model, or maybe if they're in Manhattan and they're looking for a place, like, where can they find you?
Yeah. So on Instagram, it's Jared N. Kaplan. We can link to that. And then Studio 26.
Yep, we'll link it all up in the show notes.
Studio26nyc.com. And if you're visiting New York, we would love your tourism. Again, please come back. And we are located in Chelsea. So it's a beautiful space. It looks as good in person as it does in pictures. Come by, of course, for a session. We will hook you up.
Yeah, it is a really beautiful space. And Jared is an amazing individual, and you can go see the plant wall, and it's really nice. But you know what? I would love for you to reach out to Jared, follow him on Instagram, follow his studio, maybe take a screenshot of this, and you can tag both at Jared N. Kaplan and Krista Gurka, and let us know if you have questions. We'd love to hear from you. And so thanks, Jared. I hope you'll come back soon. And I hope I can
Thank
see you
so
in your
much.
Life at some point. So
let's do it.
We will do it. Well, thanks everyone for joining me for another episode of Female Empowered. Until next time, my friends, have a great day.
Hey there. Before you go,
thanks so much for listening to this episode of Female Empowered. If you like what we covered today, I'd love to ask you for a small favor and take 2 minutes to subscribe, download, and even leave an honest review of the show. This helps other female fitness and wellness professionals find the podcast and really lets me know I'm sharing helpful information with all of you. If you want to get even more insights and find resources to help you market, streamline, and grow your service-based business, visit my website at kristagurka.com, or even better, shoot me a DM over on Instagram at Krista Gurka. That's C-H-R-I-S-T-A-G-U-R-K-A. Until next time, ladies, be brave, think big, and take action. Bye for now.